Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, chair of the club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to join us at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speakers for tonight. Kathy Murphy is the owner and operator of Home Instead Senior Care in San Francisco. Home Instead is an international franchise organization employing over 52,000 caregivers in the United States and 14 other countries. Kathy's Home Instead staff in San Francisco has been providing care to seniors for 7 years, serving over 900 clients. Her business has grown, along with her company's reputation for responsiveness and quality care. Kathy is a member of the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce, the Golden Gate Chapter of the Women's President's Organization, NPDA, National Private Duty Association, and the California Association of Healthcare Services at Home. She serves on boards of multiple professional and nonprofits, including the Bay Area chapter of NPDA and the Curry Senior Center in the Tenderloin. Sharing the program is Jane L. Mahakian, PhD, and former director of elder care programs at UCSF for nearly 10 years. Dr. Mahakian is president of Aging Matters Incorporated, a geriatric care management company in San Francisco that specializes in working with older adults with dementia and their families. Dr. Mahakian has a doctorate in clinical psychology and is a licensed marriage and family therapist. Since its inception in 1998, Dr. Mahakian conducts evaluations, provides solution-based counseling and behavioral interventions for people with memory loss. She also develops care plans and implements these plans to optimize the life of the person with a dementia. She also helps families select the best alternative living situation or coordinates quality in-home care, which allows the family and the person to live safely in their own home. In addition, Jane works as a consultant to developers planning new dementia communities, provides continuing education classes for staff members in assisted living and dementia communities, and conducts seminars and presentations to corporations in the area of elder care planning. Dr. Mahakian is a certified member of the National Association of Geriatric Care Managers and serves as a board member for the Armenian Eye Care Project. Jane is also a USA representative for the Alzheimer's Association of Armenia. So if you will, I'd like to present our first speaker, Kathy Murphy. Kathy, will you come and present?
Thank you, John. Today I'd like to emphasize home care, but the need to prepare for home care well in advance of need. Because home care is a very personal service, and what we find is that too often it's preceded by what we call a hair on fire call. And a hair on fire call means that an adult child is calling us, at least one of their parents is in the hospital. They're being discharged in the next day or two. They need some additional support when they get home, and the family isn't able to provide that support. I'm very familiar with that story, not only through my business, but that's exactly how I got started in this. I was the adult daughter. I'm the oldest of seven. And along with all of my siblings, we were caught in this crisis where both my parents, who were visiting another town, were hospitalized with critical illnesses. and they were about to be discharged. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know where to go. This was about 10 years ago. We didn't know what resources we could get our hands on, and we really didn't know what my parents could or would tolerate. That was a huge issue for us. Well, we made it through. That. Okay. All right. So now, as an owner of Homestead Senior Care, my staff divides calls into two categories. One is the research and planning category, and the other is the hair on fire category. And we can handle both types of calls and both types of situations pretty well. But believe me, it's a heck of a lot easier on the family, on the senior, on our staff, if there's some planning and some discussions that have gone into it beforehand. If everybody has a chance to think about it and deliberate before they have to make decisions, everybody moves forward with more peace of mind and comfort. So that's what I'd like to talk about today, because as I look back on my parents' situation, we could have avoided a whole lot of stress and anxiety in our family. And I actually think there's a chance we could have avoided their hospitalizations if we'd been having those conversations with them well in advance. So when I talk about those conversations, it launches me right into the topic today, which is the 40-70 rule. And the 40-70 rule is designed to bridge the communication between the generations. So the key message is, if you're an adult who's at least 40 years old, and one of your parents is alive, they're probably 70 or older, and it's a good time to start having those conversations. And you might wonder, how big is the issue? Well, I see that there are a significant number of baby boomers out here. There's probably also some people who are dealing not just with parents, maybe looking at spouses or siblings. But if you look at just the baby boomer generation, there's 75 million of us in the United States. And 72% of us have at least one parent alive. It's a big deal. So in looking at this, the Homestead Senior Care Network conducted research, and we interviewed 1,500 families in the United States and Canada. And we found out that these conversations really start with the kids. The adult children in that baby boomer group really sees it as their responsibility, and they really accept that responsibility to begin addressing these topics in these situations with their parents. And the research showed that these adult children not only want to start the conversation, but they have a real genuine interest and concern for their parents' personal lives and for their health care issues. You know, 50% want to know more about their parents' cognitive abilities, and a real close 49% want to know more about their parents' ability to take their medications correctly. And from my personal experience, this is the topic I see every time I walk into a home or talk to an adult daughter or an adult son. Because so often we walk into a home and there's medicine there, there are prescriptions there, there's no organization to them. And even if there is a Medi-Set set up, and you know what that is, the Monday through Sunday pill box, lots of times the adult children don't have any confidence that those medications are sorted correctly, they're being taken as prescribed. And lots of times what I'll find in talking to one of our new clients is they've stopped taking one of those medications. And sometimes it's because the pill's too big. They don't like to take it. You know, so this is a real area of concern with serious consequences. But, you know, when you look at having these conversations with your parents, there are some obstacles. And most of us have trouble talking with our parents about independence-related issues. You know, many children think that talking to their parents about leaving home is the toughest. But just about as many think that talking to their parents about giving up driving would be really tough. And, you know, giving up driving is not as critical an issue here in San Francisco as it probably is in other areas that aren't as urbanized as we are. But once a senior has to give up driving, boy, that is the first real undeniable loss of independence. It's a painful one. And there's an unequal partnership here, too. When we're dealing with our parents, we're still their children. And until these conversations begin to take place and gain some traction, many of our parents are still talking to us as if they're the parent, we're the child, instead of adult to adult. And sometimes the lines of communication can just be plain closed because it makes it very difficult for adult children to access necessary resources and make informed decisions if parents aren't willing to talk back to us. Going back to my own personal situation, I told you I was one of seven. I know that at least six conversations were started because we all tried it once. And then we didn't get anywhere, so we stopped. In some cases, and it's not too surprising, you know, it's almost impossible to have those conversations because if the dynamic is set up so that the adult child is still depending on the parent for support in some way or another, it's very hard to move out of that parent-child role and into an adult-to-adult role. And what we found is that there are the children who are stuck in that parent-child dynamic will talk to their, some of them, 41% is what the research showed, will talk to their parents about needing help at home. But those adult children who have more of an adult-to-adult type of relationship, a higher percentage, 67%, will talk to their parents about needing help at home. Well, there's a 26-point difference there. That makes a difference when you're talking about 75 million people. And what we have then is a potentially serious situation because for whatever reason there's a lack of communication, then it's real hard to know what's going on, and we set it up for some consequences. And it could be it's just that the medications aren't taken properly. It could be self-neglect. We see a lot of self-neglect. We go into a home, and we can see that there's not food in the refrigerator. And I don't know that the senior is really neglecting themselves all the time or if they can just not get down those stairs and out the door and down to the store. But they do without. And then there are the accidents. So the goal is to start talking now. And what we've done, I've provided you in the folder that you picked up a guide. And the guide is called the 40-70 guide. And it gives you some real practical suggestions for talking with your parents. You know, and the one they bring up is your widowed mother is diagnosed with macular degeneration. Many of you are probably familiar with it. The vision begins to degenerate around the periphery. And then it gets progressively worse. So how do you begin these conversations if you're at the point where your mother's been diagnosed? Well, the suggestion there is to take one impact at a time. You know, don't try to anticipate all the problems she could likely have and start trying to solve those. Take just one. You know, if she's out in an area where she feels it's important to drive, maybe it's time just to start talking about driving. Because chances are that she can continue to drive a little bit for a while. Deal with it that way. That's a cover of the 40-70 guide that I told you about. Make sure to broach the conversations with care. You know, and it's crucial to begin discussions assuming if, not when. I get involved in a lot of conversations where we're talking with the parent, we're talking with the adult child, and I'm there. And the parent who is beginning to talk about home care gets real defensive and real upset if all of a sudden they feel like they're being bombarded with all the consequences that are going to befall them. You know, that isn't necessarily going to happen to anybody. So be real careful to pose these questions as if, not when. And do keep talking, though, because the more conversations you can have over time, the more realistic the planning can become, the more realistic the communication can become, the more shared the communication can become. I made three service calls last week that really brought this home. And I was, in each case, I was talking to a family where we had had a planning and research call rather than a hair on fire call. So they scheduled the appointment. I met with the family. And in none of these cases was that conversation an easy one. And in none of those situations was the parent thrilled to see me there. But what had happened was is that there had been multiple conversations in these families over time. So they'd finally gotten to a point where there were some issues that everybody willingly acknowledged. So there was an openness to maybe talk about getting some help at home. And then the baby boomers who were interviewed offered some advice too. You know, they said, involve siblings if you have them. Keep it light if you can. You know, we tend to treat this as such a drastic situation. Sometimes forgetting a few things and not seeing a few things and not hearing a few things is not all that bad. And seek assistance from outside experts. Jane Mahakin will be talking to you in a couple minutes, a good example of an outside expert. And we also suggest that you talk to them about the eventuality of maybe getting some help down the road. Lots of times, the seniors that we deal with can really extend their independence, their life at home, for a longer period of time if they are open to getting some help in their home. So if you're in a situation where you're going to have these conversations, you have a need for them, we suggest that you go to the website, www.4070talk.com. When you're on the website, you can take an assessment of your intergenerational communication skills. And that's also in the guide that I gave you, too. You can download another copy of the guide. You can find some resources that can help you talk more effectively with your parents. And that's all, but I'll take questions and answers later, and I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Jing. I'm going to get out of this here for you.
Thank you, Kathy. So last week, one of my clients' adult child said to me, Jane, several years ago when we hired the home care agency for my father, I didn't really have a sense of really what that agency was about. And so she wanted express to me that you're not just hiring the caregiver, you're hiring the agency. And ironically, this is Home Instead. My client chose Home Instead because she knew she was hiring the agency, a team, not just the person in her home. You didn't even know I was going to say that, but I've just been thinking about it. Allison, can you show everybody the back of your shirt? Today is World Alzheimer's Day. The theme of World Alzheimer's Day is diagnosing dementia. See it sooner. Sorry, can everybody see me? Okay. Do you want me to stand on something? Maybe I can. I owe you for that. Oh, that's much better. That's better. Now you can see me. In any case, today is World Alzheimer's Day, and around the world, people are, the Alzheimer chapters are making it very aware, working on the awareness of Alzheimer's disease, AD, around the world. More than 35 million people will have AD, Alzheimer's disease, by 2010, by next year. They forecast that statistically it'll double every 20 years. the number of Californians with Alzheimer's disease by 2030 will be 1.1 million. And California baby boomers, us, all of us here, age 55 and older, have a 1 in 8 lifetime risk of developing the disease. The truth of Alzheimer's has not changed, but we may not have a cure right now, but at least we have hope. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a case, and then I'm going to weave in a few other things. But, you know, over the weekend, my husband, who's approaching 60, I went to turn the coffee maker on and opened up the refrigerator to get my cream, and what was in the refrigerator was the ice cream. So I said to him, honey, how did you put the ice cream in the refrigerator? He goes, I have no idea. I opened it up and I put it in. We all have those moments, don't we? We all forget our keys. We all have moments like that. But your companion of 40 years, someday, knock on wood, no longer recognizes you. You answer the phone, it's your mom, and she doesn't remember why she called or who she's calling. These are some of the harsh realities of when confronted with Alzheimer's disease. As you know, as many of you know, it causes a regression of mental and physical abilities and gradually robs the person of even the most basic capabilities. A diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease brings dramatic life changes for the person as well as for the person's family and friends. Recently, my client's adult child said to me, Jane, we've prepared for everything except for Alzheimer's disease. So everyone wants the best for their parent or loved one when they call my office. How does one define a successful plan of care for the person with Alzheimer's disease? That's what I'm going to talk to you about today. What is a successful plan of care? The successful plan of care for the person with Alzheimer's disease that's created in consultation with someone like myself or an expert, another expert, goes way beyond bringing in the best of resources. My brain, you know, my hippocampus where I store all of my long-term memory, all of those resources are full of elder care resources up and down the state. Okay? It goes way beyond bringing in the expert and having him or her, like myself, to advise you on what would be best. Way beyond being there on a dime when there's a crisis or a change in functioning to provide advisement and oversight when hospitalized. Way beyond the care manager like myself of implementing memory tools and behavioral interventions for the person in assisted living to allow them a sense of independence and contentment. Way beyond making sure he or she is safe to live at home. So the successful plan of care isn't just simply putting in the very best caregiver, the very best daycare center, the very best adult day programs. It's way beyond that. The successful plan of care is about redefining our understanding that the person with Alzheimer's disease is still there. They're present, even in the latter stages of the disease. So I can put together this fabulous plan for you, but unless you and your team, your family, and the people that you've hired can get in there and reach that person, it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or in between. What matters is reaching that person. Learning how to communicate differently and be with them in their world is the key to a successful plan of care. Do you follow me? Your plan of care may include round-the-clock care at home for your loved one in the latter stages of the disease or residing in a specialized community for people with memory loss. You and I, I'm sure many people in this room, up and down, you know, in this city, okay, have seen these communities. But as our work continues toward a reliable vaccine and more effective drugs, some Alzheimer's specialists are an advocate for a simple method of easing the stress of those who have the disease and for caregivers by creating a successful plan of care by being where that person is. Where that person is in their memory loss is where you need to be. So it's not about paying $15,000 a month at XYZ Community. Learning the language of the person with Alzheimer's disease, that is your job. And when that person with Alzheimer's disease is at home or in a community setting, every behavior has meaning. It's not simply selecting the best. The best care is extremely important for the person with Alzheimer's disease, but it's way beyond, it's moving beyond the care. It's about reconnecting with your loved one in their reality and being where they are. So how do you do that? You need to instill hope with the person with Alzheimer's disease by allowing him or her to believe that everything is fine. So you do not allow the disease to define the person. You identify your parents' strengths and support them, which allow them a quality of life that has meaning. Now, when you roll out of bed, most of us in this room know what he or she is up to. We know what our work is or what we're working on in the day, what our interests are, what our volunteer work is. Whatever you're up to, whatever makes your life meaningful, well, that doesn't change just because you acquire a disease called Alzheimer's. You identify that person's strengths and you support them, which allow them a quality of life that has meaning. The activity of life is what defines purpose and the meaningfulness for that person. That's why it's so important to be active when you have an Alzheimer's-type dementia. The person with Alzheimer's disease grasps at themselves and those around them as they search for a meaningful frame to surround and hold themselves together, to hold their identity, and to hold their perception of their self-worth. A successful plan of care centers on that person. It's person-centered. That's what it's all about, which allows them to feel acceptance and affirmed. How many of us run away when we see people with Alzheimer's disease? We don't know how to relate. Today, I ironically was out touring a few nursing facilities here in the city, and I went to a nursing facility I hadn't been to in about a decade. Okay? So I went to the third floor, and the administrator was with me. And all the people on the third floor were all men. And I looked at them again, and everybody had a tie on. And I thought, oh, do they work here? And she goes, well, no, these are our these are residents here. You know, I thought they were volunteers. They had suits and ties on here in the city. And every day, these gentlemen with Alzheimer's-type dementias and other type of dementias put a tie and a suit on. Just tie in a jacket on. And this is their world. And it's fabulous because it validates that person's identity and reality. I didn't want to leave. So, a client named Harry, his perceived basis of reality is back in time when he owned a real estate company. This is a true story. He does not understand that he's now in a secure dementia community somewhere here in California. In fact, he thinks that the staff are his employees. Isn't that nice? He'll approach a staff person, excited and anxious, wanting to know if the property has been sold. The staff, the caregiver, rather than explaining to Harry that he's now retired and lives in a community, the staff respond with, Harry, the property is in escrow. Things look really good, especially in this day, right? Yeah. Aye. He will then go away satisfied that his company is doing great and that he's a successful businessman. What's been gained is his sense of himself, and he maintains his identity. The adult child that comes to me, so worried and anxious that and just concerned about how they're going to relate to their mom. She now has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. You take a deep breath and see some of the positive ways and learn new ways to communicate with him or her and get into their world. Because as my son said over the weekend, and my son is seven, and I was talking to him about a friend of mine, and my friend wants to write a book. And my dear friend called me recently and said, would you be interested in writing a book about Alzheimer's disease? So I was speaking to my son about this. We have these kind of talks in my family. So my son said, well, Mommy, I'm going to write a book myself. So he went to his room and he wrote four or five pages. You know, he had paper like this. And on each page he wrote a line about what does it mean to have Alzheimer's disease. And the first one was, people with Alzheimer's disease forget that they ate ice cream for lunch and they have it for dinner. And it went on for three or four more pages. And the last page was, people with Alzheimer's disease are happy, but the family members are sad. And how true. Because if you really look carefully at these gentlemen that I saw in this nursing facility here in the city, I saw contentment. I did not see agitation. Very few behavioral problems there. They're content and they're satisfied. To switch gears a little bit, this March 15th at about 8:06 p.m., exactly, I received the call we all dread as adult children. Professionally, I'm a geriatric care manager since I left UCSF in 1996. I've had my own company. Personally, this is my personal story. It was about 8 o'clock at night this year. My sisters reside Los Angeles area. My parents, both in their 80s, reside in Palos Verdes, the Rock, as people who live in Palos Verdes refer to it. Both made it clear, my parents made it clear, my mother's 79 and a half, my father's 83. Well, she's almost 80 now. They were not going to move, ever, from the Rock. My father had a waterfall built in his backyard. He brought in a 500-pound turtle in the backyard, all symbolizing their staying put. And I'm serious. It's a ceramic turtle. Somehow the weight of the turtle reflected my parents' intention. They're not moving. Well, back to the call. My father's voice over their telephone was one of dread. Your mom fell. Again. We were coming out of Fatburger. Do you have Fatburger here? No, you don't have Fatburger here down the peninsula. And their doctor was joking. He said, Rose, you should have gone to In-N-Out Burger. Third fracture in the last 10 years. Same hip. Okay? Brittle diabetic, macular degeneration, almost blind. It goes on. A quick call to the doctor the next day after she's hospitalized. We all flew down. Meeting with the doctor was present. The doctor said to her, after a couple weeks of rehab here, you're going to need to go home with a caregiver. And my mother said, okay. And we were like, this is not like her. So she listened during the family meeting and everything went fine. And so I thought, I called up the agency that I trust, and she got to interview two caregivers. She chose the one that I liked best, so we were very pleased. So my job is to assess and make recommendations for care, to make sure she was living the best possible life and as independent as possible. She was going along with my program. I was thrilled. My parents are very headstrong Armenian people. I love them dearly, but they have in their mind what they want to do. Irma, the caregiver, was selected. She was bright, innovative, had a strong personality, perfect for my mother. I knew she'd back down when necessary, but other times she wouldn't. Irma, the caregiver, worked 4 hours a day on the last 2 days of my mother's hospitalization and doing rehab. We all thought, how wonderful. What a great way to know the caregiver and vice versa. We all felt just no anxiety. She was going home with this new person, and both parents bought into the idea, or so we thought. I flew home. I was happy as punch and everything else, and then it all flew apart. On discharge day, we were pleased that Irma received her list of my duties that I felt she should do and tasks that were expected of her. I had her sign off and acknowledge what was expected. In the care of my mom at home, Irma was to do all the driving. My father is not driving. I took upon the task of telephoning my father's physician, he's no longer driving, and made a report to the DMV. My dad suspected something was up when his car wasn't returned from being serviced. My father has been recently diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. I think the telling point for that was they had a dog, this was 2-3 years ago, and they took their black poodle to the groomer, and 2 hours later he returned with a standard size poodle. Something's not right. The $10,000 donation this summer was also very telling to some nonprofit we never heard of. With my back to my mom, with her equipment in place from the home health care agency, my mom returned home. I flew back to San Francisco 2 days after she was discharged, just making sure that everything was fine, all the services were set up, and everything was wonderful. Food was delivered, everything was going along quite well. A ramp was put in so she could go in and out of her home, and being the family that we are, we have a lot of relatives in LA, they all wanted to come over. They all wanted to drive in from Glendale and visit my parents. I said, don't overwhelm them. Don't do that. They wanted to. They insisted. They brought all the food, kebabs, peel off, the whole bit. They all left within a day. That was good. I returned home. On the weekend, I would fly down and monitor the care that my mom was receiving. Everything was going great for the first week. And then I received a call from Irma. My parents had sent her to the store to pick up a few things. Now, Irma is to do all the shopping. Numerous knocks on the door. Irma comes back. Knock, knock, knock. Irma is now figuring, what's going on? They're not answering the door. My parents had locked the caregiver out. Has that ever happened to you? Well, it's never happened to any of my clients. None of my clients have ever locked a caregiver out. The caregiver knocked and knocked and knocked. The caregiver calls me. My parents won't answer the door. I telephoned my father and my mother, and they said they have no intention of answering the door. And my father explained, you know, I've been married to your mother for over 60 years. I know how to care for her. And, Jane, we're aging in place. Click. He said that. We're aging in place. Click. Leave us alone. The concept is simple. People like you hire me, a professional advisor, to act as a guide through the maze of long-term care services and providers. The care manager has been there before many, many times. The family is experiencing it usually for the first time. I never in my year, all of my professional years, had a client lock a caregiver out. So a family meeting was called. Within 48 hours, we all convened at my parents' home, and they would not budge. They did not want Irma back. I said, what about another caregiver? No. So I didn't know what to do. So I put on my care manager hat. I got out of the daughter role that Kathy was talking about. And I decided to hire a geriatric care manager in Los Angeles. Her name was Susan, and Susan came to the home that day. They decided that they wanted to have an unbiased opinion about really what kind of care they needed. Care manager Susan was great. She explained that these are your options, just like I would. You can either reside at home in your own home, but as long as you live in your own home, you need a caregiver, or you could try out a community. Totally surprising all of us, they decided to try out a retirement community, and they decided to do that. At first, I thought my father was going along with the idea because he received a free lunch. You know, when you tour these communities, you receive a free lunch, right? My goodness. They did select a community. We were pleased. We were able to negotiate some of the entrance fees, all this great stuff. The 500-pound turtle moved with them and is now, like, in the little garden area. The irony of just, you know, just what happened is that it happened to me. And, you know, while we're all looking inward at Mom, we're also, you know, we're also looking at what's going on with Dad. And most people think you can do it yourself without an expert. Even one-time visit can make a tremendous difference. My parents are still at this community, as they were this morning. You know, you never know what may happen. But again, you know, the creation of this successful care plan is, again, with my father's dementia, is reminding him, you're there because of Mom. And Susan, the care manager, said to him, you're there because of your wife. Your wife needs the care. You don't, she does. And again, it's reframing it and going back to what I said earlier about defining and creating a successful plan of care. It's allowing that person to remain in his or her reality. And we're winning. Yeah, I don't know what we're winning, but we're allowing them to be validated. No one wins or loses. It's all about maintaining them in the highest quality of life. So I want to thank you for your time this evening. And Kathy and I, I'm sure we'll take questions.
Our thanks to Dr. Jane Mahakian and Kathy Murphy for their comments here this evening. I am John Milford, a member of the Commonwealth Club's Grown-Ups Forum, and I'll be moderating today's audience question period. I'm sure we have a large number of questions, so if you'll raise your hand, we'll take your question and pass the microphone to you.
Jane, when the care manager from Los Angeles, Susan, met with your family, were you or any of your siblings there?
No. No, we were not there. Yes.
You mentioned that the incidence of Alzheimer's was doubling over the next few years. Can you tell me to what that is attributed to? What is causing the acceleration?
Oh, that's a good question. It's a very good question. People are living longer than any other time before in history, and it's many factors. Some of it is genetic. Some of it's environmental. It depends upon, what school you're coming from in terms of the research, too. Some people think it's more environmental than genetic. But there is a 50% chance you'll acquire an Alzheimer's-type dementia if one of your parents has a probable diagnosis of the disease. So there's many different factors that make up why it's happening so much. People are living longer than any other time before in history.
Is it a reasonable question for you, or maybe you did, I'm sorry I'm late, deal between dementia and Alzheimer? Are there basic, or maybe you've already spoken to that?
Well, dementia is a constellation of symptoms, and there are many different types of dementias. There's Alzheimer's-type dementia, there's Wernicke's-type dementia, there's multi-infarct-type dementia. But dementia just means it's symptoms. It's a constellation of symptoms that include memory loss, confusion, poor judgment, lack of insight, difficulty organizing oneself during the day.
Environmentally, can we prevent Alzheimer's by vitamin E, cholesterol lowering agent, brain exercise.
Last year, I remember John invited Dr. Leslie Squires to talk a little bit about that. He did here last year on that, and research has shown, like, ginkgo is helpful, the vitamin E has been helpful. Studies have shown that. Red wine at night, one glass of red wine a night has been helpful. Physical activity and exercise is very important for people. All acts as a way to slow down the onset and the progression.
Are there any drugs that are effective in slowing the progression of Alzheimer's or dementia?
There are medications currently on the market, absolutely. If you Google under Alzheimer type medications, you'll see the newest medications. There's new ones coming out also. I know there's also a patch possibly coming out in 5 years that will act as deterrent against acquiring the disease. So we're making tremendous strides. Well, again, you wouldn't want to consult with your neurologist or a geriatric psychiatrist. Our city here has some wonderful neurologists here that you can consult with. Some medications are helpful and some medications aren't. It's really case by case.
Yes, I'm a one of five siblings, and our mother has Alzheimer's. And currently, she lives at home, and she's very happy, and we have in care for her. My concern is her neurologist and her physician are thrilled about how healthy she is, other than her Alzheimer's disease. And I'm very happy about that, but as the disease progresses, my concern, as well as my siblings' concern, is my mother has a limited amount of resources, and her children have a limited amount of resources. And if we're worried about her bankrupting her five kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, because if she lives another 10 or 15 years, mm-hmm. it could be serious mm-hmm. situation for us. Mm-hmm. So, as an expert in this field, mm-hmm. Is there anywhere to go? Is there anywhere you can guide family to look at outside resources? Mm-hmm. Finances are a big
for everybody.
Part of this disease.
Finances are the biggest part for every family, and how to pay for care, and what are the resources out there? Like, for instance, if your mother or father were a veteran, you know, the veterans will pay for up to $1,800 a month for assisted living care or home care, for example. There are resources. But again, it's case by case. Where your mom lives drives the cost up. It just depends upon, call me. You know, it's case by case. Trying to think of other websites you can go to look at that. But if you email me, I can email you some ideas.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I have a question that is actually a good segue from the previous question. Both of you talked about people having issues and dealing with their adult children. Well, some older people either don't have children at all or don't have children who live nearby or don't have any children who are responsible enough to take on these issues. So I'm wondering about finding advocates for dealing with Medicare, dealing with health insurance issues, mm-hmm. dealing with legal issues, mm-hmm. real estate issues. You mentioned veterans care. Well, I'm sure mm-hmm. there's a lot of people who might qualify for all kinds of services, and they don't know that those services mm-hmm. exist. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering about a network of advocates, mm-hmm. how people find them, how much they cost.
Well, you know, an advocate would be, you know, you can go to the National Association of Geriatric Care Managers, and depending upon what part of the state or part of the country you live in, care managers are advocates. A good, competent care manager should be your advocate and guide you through that maze of elder care. whether it's, you know, having your mom make the have the application for the veterans benefit or for Medi-Cal or Medicaid out of state or pulling in an elder law attorney, whatever it is, that care manager should be that person to, that would be your hub of resources. Absolutely.
And who pays for that?
You do. It's all private pay. It's all care managers are all private pay. Like, for instance, in my company, I do some pro bono work. When you call me up, I don't charge people for telephone. I don't. I'm happy to give you resources. I'm not going to do that. I can steer you and guide you on what websites to go to. Like, for instance, California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform is a fabulous website here in the city. It's a great resource. You go on there. If you're looking for a nursing facility that accepts Medi-Cal, it's all right there. It's wonderful. I'm sure your experience, too, John, with, you know, you want to be able to capitalize on as much resource as possible. But here in San Francisco, it's so rich, there's a lot of different agencies and things that can help.
Say something about the area agency.
Oh, yeah. San Francisco Area and Agency is excellent. It's a great resource that is very, very helpful. Very helpful. So there you can receive the advice and the guidance around financial issues, around legal issues. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's some very good elder law attorneys here in the city, too. But go ahead. Oh, sure. The San Francisco Area on Aging. And they do have a website. You just Google it.
On aging. Every county has an agency on aging.
It's excellent resource. Excellent.
Would you address the brain changes in Alzheimer's disease, and when do they appear in the Alzheimer's and the course of Alzheimer's, and should we all be getting brain x-rays every year or two?
Well, short of getting brain x-rays every year or two, you know, it's going to look different in each of us, but usually the symptoms are short-term memory loss. And it's more than just losing your keys. We all do that in our 40s, 50s, and 60s. We lose our keys. Or we're going to call somebody, we go to the phone, and we forget who we're calling. I've done that many times. There's no set course. There's no set pattern. And it's going to look differently in your loved one than it will in another person. But the cornerstone is the short-term memory loss.
Yeah, but I was addressing the anatomical.
What does it look like?
Well, those changes are determined later on postmortem examination. Most of us are more anxious to know sooner than that. But I think the car key thing is a very good example. Most of us who are over 55 lose our keys once in a while, can't find them. When it's time to get a brain x-ray is when you find your keys and you can't remember what they're for. That's the problem.
Very good. Exactly. You look at your keys, you don't know what they're for. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to know if you know of any games or things that can engage somebody with Alzheimer's.
Sure.
Either computer or board games.
Sure. Well, here in the city, we have POSIT Science, right? POSIT Science, POSIT. Science, you Google that and you'll see all types of things for people with mild cognitive impairment, which is on the rise. It's wonderful. Wonderful stimulating activities and games that they can do on the computer or books that you can purchase.
Is that the organization, the UCSF Professor Partner Esports?
Yes. Yes.
Anything else?
Oh, there's... Yes, please.
There's another company called Dakim. D-A-K-I-M. Dakim does brain exercise work that has more to do with music, visual, clips from old movies, things that people relate to. And it's also, it's not a scientific, it's more artistic. And many times people relate to music or art or things that they remember. So there are other approaches.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good.
I just wanted to remind people that the Alzheimer's Association website has some very good information about different kinds of dementia, and it also has information about what is normal memory loss and what is something that is pretending possible Alzheimer's or some other kind of dementia.
Right, good point.
Also, the UCSF Memory and Aging Center, their website has good information about the different kinds of dementia.
Thank you. That's excellent. So ALZ.org. That's excellent. Thank you. Appreciate that.
What's the UCSF group?
It's the UCSF Memory and Aging with Dr. Bruce Miller at UCSF.
All right, our time is nearly gone. Our thanks to Dr. Jane Mahakian and Kathy Murphy for their comments here today. Thank you. We also thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 105th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.